Hello, welcome to the 105th episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As always, we're very sorry for the previous 104 episodes. I am Matt Corey. I am here in Portland, Oregon, and I am joined today with co-host Brendan O'Toole, who now has the title co-host, and our special guest, Chris Hatfield from Sox Prospects. Gentlemen, how are you?
Hello. What's going on? I always don't know how to do that when there's two people answering. I try to defer.
But. No, you know, actually, I learned from hearing some podcasts in the past. I'll be as general as I can here. that you must be specific on a podcast when you are attempting to address people, because otherwise you get lots of dead space. I obviously just failed miserably at that.
It's okay.
But in any case, Brendan, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. But the Red Sox had a miracle win, so nothing is bad.
That's true. Yes, all life is now good. the pain in my back is gone, and I can see out of both eyes, so it's pretty great. Chris, what's up, man?
Yes. Hey, I'm glad to be back. I think this might be a record for longest time between appearances. You said you'd call me after that night. No, it's fine. It's a pleasure to be on. It's you know, we've been in touch and everything. It's fine. No, yeah. I'm it's always a pleasure.
I'm a big fan, Chris. So it's good to have you on always. And we should work to do it more often. Although my understanding is you will soon be employed and therefore completely unavailable. So we can all look forward to
employed
that.
Employed in a different sense. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll try and keep this going. But
all right, good.
At any rate.
So the Red Sox just had, as I sit on my microphone cord, a draft, and so did all the other teams for that matter. But the other teams can go screw as far as we're concerned. So the Red Sox had the, what was it, 20, I don't have it in front of me, shockingly. Oh, number 26, I do have it in front of me. The 26th pick in the 2014 draft. And they also had the 33rd pick, which I believe they got for losing Jacoby Ellsbury to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. And after that, I think things went kind of sequentially. I've read a number of reviews of their draft overall, and I would like to talk about some of the specific guys that they picked. But generally speaking, Chris, how do you think they did? I mean, obviously it's a week and a half later, but in terms of potential and just your opinion, how do you think they did?
Yeah, well, with the caveat that, you know, I tend to come in more after the fact, you know, following the draft and, you know, then prepping up front. But my take on it was that at least on day one, at least maybe day one and then the first pick of day two. So day one of the draft is rounds one and two, and day two is rounds 3 through 10, and then they go through 11 through 40 on day three. I liked what they did on day one with their two first round picks and the second round pick. Getting Michael Chavis, the Georgia high school infielder, and Michael Kopech, the Texas right-handed pitcher, in the first round, and then the Indiana University first baseman, Sam Travis, in the second round. I thought that was a really successful first day. A lot more high ceiling than they tend to get, honestly. That's the first time they took two high school players, I think, since 2003 or two. Wow. The last time they did it, the first guy was John Lester, who people have heard of. And, the second guy was Scott White, who I'm guessing most people haven't heard of, which there's something to be learned there. But anyway, you know, it's been a while since they went with two high school guys, 1-2 like that. And then, you know, Travis was kind of a good, you know, brought in the portfolio a little bit, pick in the second round. And then I liked the first pick of the second day on their third rounder, Jake Cozart, who's Jared Cozart's younger brother, who's a junior college right-handed pitcher out of Florida. You know, kind of an interesting pick there. After that, for the rest of day two, I thought they got a little conservative. Nothing really sticks out too much. A couple guys that are interesting. And then after that, you know, it's just such a crapshoot. Although I do like that they have reportedly signed a couple of their higher ceiling guys that they drafted later on already. They've already got at least one over slot guy, their 15th rounder, Trenton Kemp, out of high school outfielder out of California, and they've reportedly signed a catcher out of Virginia, high school catcher Devin Fisher, who was committed to UVA and therefore has great taste.
Chris went to
your
UVA,
listeners don't.
So,
yeah. I just graduated from UVA. So, So, it's interesting. You know, it didn't jump out at me as it jumped out. Well, I should say it jumps out as better than the last couple of years overall, but this was a better draft than the last couple of years. So
right.
That probably has more to do with it than anything. And, you know, a lot can happen. You know, picks, I don't necessarily want to go into specifics, but there are some picks from last year that, and I'm not talking about Trey Ball, so I'll say that, but from last year that looked really great at the time that now not so much. So a lot can happen, you know, in a year's span. So, but for right now, I think it's, you know, cautious optimism maybe might be the way to put it.
I think that's a very intelligent way to put it. And of course, you know, Michael Chavis will make the Hall of Fame.
Of course.
We know that now. In all seriousness, I heard a number of reviews of Chavis, the shortstop. He is probably not a shortstop, is my understanding. He, right. I mean, everyone who is good at high school baseball plays shortstop or pitcher. So, and I guess maybe some catcher. But so Chavis was a shortstop. So my understanding is he is maybe shorter and a little stockier. He might be better off at third base or potentially in the outfield. Of course, these things are always to be determined. And but the thing that makes me excited about him is that supposedly he has the best hit tool of high school of a high school hitter in the draft. Now, if that's really true, why would such a guy like that fall to number 26? I mean, he obviously wasn't expected to be difficult to sign, per se.
Yeah, and he's reportedly already agreed to terms. I guess today on Twitter, it looked like he was flying from Boston to Fort Myers, for whatever that's worth. Could probably read into that, honestly. I think that, you know, that everything you say makes perfect sense. I think part of it is the, you know, he's expected to move off shortstop. If you were a shortstop long term, he probably gets taken higher. The hit tool is great, but you know that there's the short, stocky thing. He doesn't drip athleticism necessarily or anything. You know, like the comparison I always used to make, and I hate to make it, but like when you saw Ryan Westmoreland play baseball, you knew he was a baseball player and he was going to be good,
right?
Just because of how he carried himself and how he looked. Never, you know, looked when he was playing the game. You mentioned he's kind of short and stocky. He's not quite, you know, Pedroia short and stocky, 5'10", 190, but he's already kind of filled out. There's not a whole lot of projection in his frame. You know, he's not necessarily this, you know, dripping athlete. And that's probably another way in which this draft was different than what the Red Sox usually do. They didn't just go with the raw athlete types that they usually do. They seem to get a lot more, you know, baseball guys, pitchers that are already dialing up some velocity hitters with the hit tool and things like that. He could have gone maybe a little earlier, but, you know, there were, when you're picking at 26, you're not going to get a guy that checks every single box. And I think it was kind of that was the thing where it's kind of the look, the frame, you know, he's athletic, I think, but not necessarily, you know, going to fly around. He's not an 80 speed guy or anything like that. So, you know, he's not the athlete that Mookie Betts is, per se, might be the way to put it. So,
right.
So I think that might be more why he fell, but still at 26. That, you know, you read the scouting report and it's something you're okay with getting at 26. That's for sure.
Yeah, he sounds really promising with the bat, and
and he reportedly signed for slot as well, like exactly slot, which is great. Mike Andrews from our website and his projections had him going for a little bit over slot. Slot was 1.87 million, and Mike had him going for probably like 1.9. So. You know, a little bit less than it was might have been projected.
Does that money?
That's great.
That money, in theory, at least, gets turned around and spent on other players. Correct.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. So. Well, he signed right at slot, so he'll. You know, his money is. You know, just the money for the pick. If he had signed for under, you could have taken the money and put it elsewhere.
Oh right.
So, for example, Michael Kopech, the number 33 pick, signed for just barely under slot. So that's like, the report was $1.5 million. Actually, I know his signing got reported. I don't know if the bonus figure was confirmed, but I think Alex Speer reported $1.5 million. So that's $178,000 they can spend elsewhere, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's, you know, maybe a guy after the 10th round you can throw another $100K at than you otherwise would have, which could make the difference in bringing one more guy into the system. So,
okay. So I have also, Brendan, I don't mean to cut you off. So if there's anything you want to interject, please, shut me up. But, moving on to Kopech, I heard or I read some reports that sounded more glowing than the reports on Trey Ball. Now, obviously, you're talking about two different drafts, right? So if Ball was in this draft, he might have been picked later. I don't know. Kopech.
Well, almost certainly would have, I would think, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, ignoring Trey Ball for as long as we possibly can right now. Can you tell us a little bit about Kopech? I mean, he's a high school guy. What's to recommend him?
Well, the big thing that jumps out is that, you know, he's got good velocity. He's hit 98. In fact, his Twitter like profile, it says 99 miles per hour in it, which I just fantastic and ballsy.
That is great.
It's great. But the thing with him, and, you know, again, we talk about the check boxes, is that that velo came this year. He was sitting much lower than that. He was sitting, you know, high 80s, low 90s as a junior. And then this year was when he started sitting low to mid 90s during games. So, you know, I think that's kind of the how the heck did he fall this far for him. But yeah, so he's got the velocity already, you know, 6'3", so he's got a good pitcher's build, 195. And you know, he's certainly got, I think he's got, let me see here. This is the stalling while I open things up that I mentioned. But no, he's got, where's the secondaries? Yeah, he's got feel for his secondaries. The thing with him too, I can't believe I almost forgot this. His mechanics are funky as hell.
Okay.
You don't have to be a scout to pick this up in the videos. So if anybody, I think BP might have video of him on YouTube, Baseball Prospectus. But yeah, so if you look, he's got this weird leg kick. It looks like Jared Weaver a little bit. And I think he's described it as he gets a high leg kick that he tried to model after Nolan Ryan.
Oh, boy.
And then it's just a really funky delivery. It would not surprise me if, you know, just looking ahead, I could just foresee something next year where he starts out in Greenville and is terrible out of the gate because they're reworking his mechanics.
Oh, okay.
So the comparison would be like right now, I know Miles Smith is in Greenville and he's, you know, trying to work with completely different mechanics. So from start to start, there's a whole lot of variation on the results because, you know, he's getting used to pitching completely differently than he's used to. I could see them maybe tweaking a thing or two with Kopech. Although, you know, I think even Charrington, I don't know if it was Charrington or Emil Sade, the scouting director, who compared him to Jared Weaver as well. So maybe they're into the Weaver delivery, but, you know, he's got a loose arm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I mean, in theory, the advantage of having a strange delivery is that, you know, you'd hide the ball better potentially and that you would just throw batters off who wouldn't have seen a delivery like that. And I guess the reason you would change a delivery like that is because there's increased chance of injury.
Well, that, and I mean, you know, there's a degree to which an interesting delivery can help, but then you've got the Michael Bowdens of the world for whom, you know, having a strange delivery did nothing once they got to face, you know, AAA and major league hitters, you know?
Right.
So it's a matter of, you know, maybe do you want him to throw with a little less effort, with a little less, you know, a little more smoother mechanics. You don't necessarily want to make him a robot, but, you know, maybe smooth him out a little bit, get the, you know, release point a little different or something to that effect. You know, I'm no, you know, this isn't 10 step. So, you know,
right.
you know, so it kind of is what it is, but, you know, you can definitely look at it, and it's really striking. You know, like I said, not being a, you know, a scout myself, I do a little bit of it, but it immediately jumps out at you, which was kind of striking. But that said, hey, he's already hitting 98 as a high schooler. That's hard to get at 33 in the draft. So, you know, I probably would have been happy with him at 26, to be honest. So it was a nice get for them at that point of the draft. And he, like I said, he signed for under slot. Wow. So you can also take some money and spend it elsewhere. In fact, you know, you can look at it one way where he signed for 178K under, and, you know, their fifth rounder, Josh Okimi, signed for 161K over. So that winds up balancing out. So it helps.
That is a guy I wanted to get to, but I forgot to ask you. Where do these guys start out this year? I mean, the guys who just signed, presumably the season is still ongoing. I mean, they're going to get sent somewhere.
Yep.
Where does Chavis start?
Chavis and Kopech, I think, both go to the GCL. Okay. As I mentioned, Chavis has apparently said he's on his way to Florida, so
right,
that
right. Okay.
Helps kind of confirm that.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
They have said that Chavis actually will start off at shortstop, which is interesting, given that, you know, pretty much every projection has him moving off mm-hmm. of short. So it'll be. I wonder if they're going to keep him there just for now, so he's comfortable, and then move him an instructional league or spring training or something. But Kopech also, to the extent that he throws this year, which who knows with the high school guys, but to the extent that he throws this year, he'll definitely be thrown in the GCL as well.
So they may actually not even let him throw this year just because he's already thrown some innings in a negative way, but oh, okay.
Yeah, well, no, and it's fine because they're very cautious with their draftees, almost to the point where, I mean, I know internally at the website, I know there's a couple of us who get extremely frustrated by it. You know, Trey Ball, for example, last year threw 10 innings after he signed. But part of that is getting used to a 5-day rotation. You know, I was in Manchester recently, and I was sitting, you know, behind home plate, and I was talking with one of the Portland pitchers who was charting. And I asked him about that, you know, just how much of a difference does it make? And he said it actually did make a big difference. And he was a college pitcher. I'll go ahead and say it. It was Brian Johnson. You know, and he was saying, hey, you know, even for me as a college guy, you know, I'm used to throwing every, you know, once a week on, I forget if he was their Friday starter or not, but, you know, I'm throwing once a week, you know, then coming in and having to throw every 5 days, it is a lot different. You know, your body doesn't get as much time to rest between starts. So that's part of why the Red Sox, you know, or at least the philosophy behind babying these guys a little bit. But that said, it's frustrating when you look over at the Orioles and you see Hunter Harvey has however many innings he pitched last year and, you know, pitches enough to earn a promotion to, you know, their short season team. So yep. Teams have different ways of doing it, but based on history with the Red Sox, it wouldn't surprise me if they minimize Kopech's innings and just kind of, you know, let him ease into the five-day rotation.
Gotcha. Well, if we can move on to Sam Travis, he's a very interesting guy because it doesn't seem like it's a typical Red Sox pick. I mean, I can't remember when the last time they picked, well, they picked two of them, I guess, in the first 10 picks, but I was going to say a first baseman.
Yeah.
I mean, they're certainly not that high in the draft. So what's, I mean, obviously, you know, he's at first, obviously he's got some power. You know, he's a college guy. He did sign already, right? He did sign, yeah.
He's actually 0-3 tonight in his debut in Lowell. So,
okay, great. Off to a flying start.
So he's a bust, obviously.
Yeah, done. Cut him. So what can you tell us about him?
Yeah, well, you know, I actually had the same reaction both between Travis and, you know, not to bring up someone we're not talking about yet, but Josh Okimi, who is a high school first baseman out of Pennsylvania. You're right. They don't draft first baseman, and that's part of they usually go with the up the middle athletes. But, you know, Travis, probably a first baseman, but he might play a little bit of left. He spent a little bit of time at third for the Yarmouth Dennis Red Sox in the Cape. So he may not necessarily just be a first baseman. They may try and make him a first baseman, corner outfielder type guy.
Right.
But you know, he's another guy who is only 6 feet tall, you know, 200 pounds. So college guy, he's probably not going to, you're not going to project on the frame very much. But you know, does hit for some power, he hit for some power at Indiana at a, you know, good college program this year, you know, had, you know, 9, 10, and 12 home runs in his 3 years, always slugged over 500, which means a lot more than it used to, always hit over 300. You know, nice compact swing, he hits to all fields. And, you know, he's got good bat-to-ball skills, but, you know, maybe not necessarily a super high ceiling, but, you know, for the 67th pick overall, you know, I know a lot of our draft watchers who read the website and we're posting on our message board were worried that the Sox might take a college hitter earlier on, which more out of it, it's not that sexy to pick a college guy early that, you know, may not have as high a ceiling as, you know, the high school guys we've been talking about. But, you know, he's a guy who down the line maybe could fill that sort of, like I said, first base corner outfield role. You know, a little bit undersized, but he hits. And like I said, that's something they really seem to focus on early, you know, with him and Chavis, is that these guys can hit, they can put bat to ball, they can get it in play. And that's one thing he does well. And they'll see where that gets him.
It seems like at the major league level, there is a dearth of quality first baseman, which is odd to say. But
in the minors too, right? Like I remember looking at MLB.com's position by position rankings, and like Travis Shaw not only made it, but I think he was relatively high in there. And meanwhile, we didn't even have him in our top 20 for the system,
right?
You know, which just kind of shows you, I mean, it's not necessarily a knock on Shaw because it's a deep system, but it also just shows you how thin first base is right now. And it, you know, part of me wonders if the Red Sox may be focusing on some different things this year was them trying to zig when everyone else was zagging. Mm-hmm. Another thing they got away from a little bit was the senior sign strategy that they'd used the past couple of years. You know, with the way the current CBA goes, you know, your draft cap is on your first 10 rounds. And so the past 2 years, the Red Sox tried to game the system a little bit by picking college seniors who had basically no bargaining power and signing them for well below slot in, you know, rounds, say, 7 or 8 through 10. You know, for example, I mean, in 2012, their 10th round pick was JT Watkins, who was the scout Danny Watkins' son, who went to Army and is now in the Army and not playing. And they gave him basically like $5,000 as a signing bonus.
Yeah,
which was fine. I mean, because he was perfectly good enough to go to Lowell, but, you know, they had no intention of him staying with the team long term, I don't think. But this year they only drafted one college senior in the first 10 rounds, and that was Cole Sturgeon, the 10th round pick, who's an outfielder out of Louisville, who will probably sign soon now that Louisville has gotten knocked out of the College World Series. But, you know, meanwhile, more college seniors were drafted this year than in any year prior. So, again, maybe it's a little bit of them trying to zig when everyone else is zagging, you know, go with guys with the, you know, the hit tool, or, you know, already getting velo, and some other teams might be going athletes. I'm not sure, but it's definitely a change, and it's interesting to see.
Yeah. I wonder if Cole Sturgeon is a reaction to acquiring people with the last name that is a name of a fish.
That's a fish. Yeah. Yeah. It's who knows? Who knows? Maybe if he's, you know, a tenth of the player Mike Trout. I'll even take right. A poor man's Tim Salmon or something, you know.
Yeah. There's another one. That's a good one. Yeah. Absolutely. That's really the key, is finding people with fish names, I think, in the draft.
Or just name puns.
Like who?
Well, the guy that I'm kind of really sad they didn't take this year is there was a guy who was draft eligible who I honestly don't even know where he got picked, but whose name was Fenway Parks. I'm not even kidding. It which is just too perfect.
How did they not pick him? I don't care who he is or where he's from. How do you not?
If the draft
were
still 50 rounds, I think then there would be no excuse. But there was one player, I can't remember his last name, but his first name was Handsome.
Handsome. Oh shit.
What was his name?
Oh, it was a Handsome Monica, I think.
Handsome Monica, which is just 80 grade.
Yeah, that's really good.
It's outstanding.
Did he get drafted?
Yes. Yeah, he definitely got picked. I don't know if he's going to sign or not because he's a high schooler, but he definitely got picked.
All right. So that's Sam Travis. So I guess, you know, he'll be a first base prospect or potentially in the left field. Moving on. I mean, after that, my knowledge is iffy. I know the first baseman from Philadelphia. I don't know him, but I mean, I know of him.
Right.
You know, the comparison, which I'm sure is wildly off, is Ryan Howard, which, you know, whatever. I mean, first of all, this kid is a lot smaller than Ryan Howard. I guess he's from the same city, so there's that. Mm-hmm. And he plays the same position. He's a first baseman. But I found the selection odd because I think I don't think he was ranked in – who does the top – But Baseball America is the top.
Baseball America, yeah.
300.
500.
Yeah, and he wasn't in it.
Which is, and then it's weird because I forget who, it might have been Jim Callis or someone was saying that it was a great pick. And you just, the, you know, cognitive dissonance there is like, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
how is he not ranked in, I mean, obviously Jim Callis isn't at Baseball America anymore, so that's not what I'm implying. But, you know, it was weird. The thing with, so his name is Josh, I'm going to go with Okimi. I have no idea if that's correct.
Okay.
A on the size. So MLB.com had him listed at 6'1", 215.
Yeah.
I had seen in at least one place he was listed as 6'4".
Oh.
So that might be part of where the Ryan Howard comparison might make a little more sense.
Yeah, definitely.
I look forward to, you know, next year's spring training when we maybe get a little bit more of an accurate sizing of him.
Right, right.
And actually, I might try and get down to the GCL in August. So if I do that, then we'll see. But yeah, this to me was the most out there pick for what they usually do. You know, we talked about first baseman, but, you know, big first baseman who no way are moving off the position. You know, at least Travis might, you know, play a corner outfield spot or something. But plus power potential, you know, good bat speed, but kind of a, you know, maybe a little rough. This isn't a guy that they take in the first 10 rounds usually. I'm going to be really interested in him.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Philadelphia is really not, I mean, people love baseball there, but
mm-hmm.
it's not California or Florida in terms of, you know, high school talent.
Right. Right.
I mean, I, you know, obviously that was the knock against, you know, Mike Trout as well.
Mm-hmm.
So take that for whatever that's worth. But, you know, the guy wasn't quite standing out like Mike Trout either. So it makes you think that they have some sort of inside knowledge about him, but it's also kind of odd that they would pick him that high, because it doesn't sound like they were in danger of losing him had they picked him, had they, you know, made him, sorry, I can't talk, picked him in the 20th round or whatever.
Well, I mean, yes and no. They might have known that another team was on him. I think at that point you're looking at, you know, what your area scouts and maybe cross checkers know about how the guy was being scouted. Maybe there was a team that might have been in on him in the sixth or seventh round.
Oh, okay.
You know, and part of that too is just with the way the bonuses are structured for each pick. You know, Okimi wound up signing for $450K is the report. That said, you know, there, that's only 160 above slot, but if you're going to take him in maybe round 9 or 10, that's much higher above slot, and then at round 11, all bets are off. So, to me, if you're looking at that round 4 or 5 area, that's one of your last chances to take a higher bonus guy early. I think Ty Buttrey, who was an overslot guy in 2012. Yeah, he was taken in the fourth round when they gave him $1.3 million. And it's a situation where if you can't take him after that in the first 10 rounds. Otherwise, you're waiting to the 11th. And at that point, you know, it's almost fair game for everyone. So that might it's weird with the way the new CBA almost makes, like, you know, rounds 1 through 5 are really rounds 1 through 5. And then 6 through 10 are really more like what we used to think of as, like, maybe the late, you know, teens. And then, you know, round 10 is like round 6. It's really weird. How it kind of does that. The talent after that doesn't really wind up shaking down necessarily the way you might rank them. So, you know, if they knew that a couple of teams ahead of them might want to pop Okimi in the 11th round, say, then the 5th might be a good place to take him.
Gotcha. All right. There's only one other guy who, I mean, there's obviously lots of other guys who are probably interesting, but there's only one other guy who I have any working knowledge of, and that's Carsten Whitson, who they picked in the 11th round.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting selection. Whitson was the ninth overall
ninth.
Pick?
I think ninth, yeah.
I just pulled it up here. Yes, ninth overall selection in the 2010 draft by the Padres. The Padres offered him $2.1 million, and he turned it down and went to college, where he promptly blew his arm out.
Mm-hmm. I think it might have been his shoulder. Actually.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is worse.
Yes. That's probably true. It is worse. Not probably. That is true. It is worse. So, you know, and then the Red Sox obviously picked up this guy after the injury, but he was pretty highly thought of before the injury. So what's the story on him?
Yeah, I mean, that's you pretty much hit all the major points there. You know, if as far as you can go with the 11th round with a college guy, it's about as, you know, maybe a lottery ticket of a pick as you can make. And it's kind of funny because picks 11, 12, and 13 for them were three college pitchers who maybe don't have that same story to the degree Whitson does, where he was a top 10 pick, but were all just kind of like guys who were highly thought of before they went to college and then maybe didn't quite reach that potential, which is interesting. Whitson is one of those things where if he, you know, he can top out 96 right now. And again, you know, we're talking about velocities we're not necessarily used to talking about from these guys. You know, sits low 90s. He's got a slider and a changeup that are inconsistent. If it was in fact injuries that caused him to not really perform at Florida the way you might have thought when he came out of high school, then, you know, he could be a real nice lottery ticket for them. Not to keep saying the same thing over and over, but you know, guys like that aren't necessarily available in the 11th round. So, hey, if it's not the injuries, then it's an 11th round pick and you're not necessarily, you know, punting on your fourth rounder or anything like that. But yeah, the upside there is really interesting. He's going to sign, apparently. He's not official yet, but it looks like that's going to happen, I guess. I'm interested to see how he does in Lowell, because that's, you know, a good test for me. Not necessarily to say like, oh, his stats are great in Lowell, therefore he's going to be great. You know, the stats don't necessarily mean anything, but just if the performance matches that of some of the college guys we've seen go to Lowell, you know, then it kind of puts him on the radar for me as a guy to keep an eye on, right, despite the fact that the Florida numbers weren't that great. It's an interesting pick at 11. That's definitely for sure.
Is there anybody else who stands out that we haven't talked about specifically?
Another interesting background. The other interesting background would be Jake Cozart, the third rounder out of Seminole State in Florida. Like I mentioned, he's Jared Cozart's brother, the pitcher for the Astros. So he went to Duke as an outfielder and never even debuted with the team. He wound up transferring to Seminole State, which for anyone who might think that rings a bell and say Teddy Stankwitz went there, there's actually two different Seminole States. Stankwitz went to the Oklahoma one and Cozart went to the Florida one. And they both produce a lot of baseball players, which makes it even more confusing. But Cozart is interesting in that he just started pitching full time as a JUCO and he's already sitting 92 to 95 and touching 98 with no clue what he's doing yet. So he's the type. Right. Yeah, it's like Rick Vaughn or something. So, you know, it's an interesting background. It's very Red Sox in that there's not a lot of mileage on his arm. You know, we know that they love taking guys like that maybe might have been relievers in college and don't have a lot of miles or only recently converted to pitching full time or something like that. Or even if it's something like Trey Ball, where he didn't throw a curveball for all of high school. It's I'm really intrigued to see what they do with him. When he signs, I would bet they send him to the Gulf Coast League, even though he's a junior college guy, just because he's so new to pitching. That way, you know, the roster's so big, they don't need to throw him in every, you know, rotation slot. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if they used him, not out of the bullpen, but start him irregularly for two innings and then pull him or something like that. You know, he'll be something of a project, but it's a project that's, you know, already sitting mid-90s. And we were talking a little bit before that maybe velocity isn't everything, but when you've got, you know, the raw ball of clay is better when it's already throwing, you know, 92 to 95 than when it's, you know, sitting low, high 80s, low 90s, a little bit more to work with there. So that's going to be a really interesting guy to follow, I think, in the next couple of years. He could completely bust out entirely or, you know, who knows, maybe be a guy that busts out in a good way, you know, down the line if he puts everything together.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all these guys are so, I don't know, I find it fascinating to follow the minor leagues and the, you know, the way that guys are moved up and down and you know, take these leaps in numbers and ability and velocity and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird. And they go in the other direction sometimes, too. You know, guys that you are certain are going to be future stars don't make it to, you know, double A. So it's it's weird.
It is weird. Chris, you do just a fabulous job along with your colleagues at the Sox Prospects of covering that. So anyone who doesn't read Sox Prospects is missing out. It's SoxProspects.com. Couldn't be easier to find on the net. Chris, I wanted to, I mean, I know we talked about just, you know, mentioning, you know, discussing just the minor league system. But it occurs to me, it might be interesting to look at the 2013 draft.
Sure.
And I don't know, how prepared you are and need to be for that.
Hey, let's do it.
Okay.
Ready? I'm my toes.
Excellent.
Bring it.
I will attempt to bring it slowly and carefully so that I don't break anything. we've got a year now since the Red Sox picked, they picked seventh overall, it was. They actually had a number of picks. I guess they had three in the top, well, the top 81, if you want to be really jerky about it. Six in the top 173. So whatever that is. I think what, you know, when you pick seventh overall, first of all, it's not something Red Sox fans are normally used to, picking that high, which is great. No complaints at all, but, you know, I guess it was a small silver lining for the season that the Red Sox went through in 2012. What has become? I'm gonna phrase this like a "Where are they now?" thing, even though it was a year ago. What has become of Trey Ball? Where is he now? Is he he's a mystic on the California coast?
No, that's okay. That's Lars Anderson, actually. I've talked to Lars. He's a good dude. I don't want to sound like I'm making fun of him, but
no, not at all.
Ball, he didn't debut until the very end of April. He got kept behind in extended spring training for a number of reasons. Part of that being that there were a couple guys in Pat Light and Cody Kukoc who probably were ready for high A Salem, but the Red Sox started them in Greenville to kind of, you know, get maybe a good base underneath them before moving up a level. So there weren't really spots, and you know, they took that opportunity to maybe keep Ball behind a little bit and keep his innings down maybe a little artificially for the year. That said, it's been really bumpy since he got to Greenville, we'll put it that way maybe. Mm-hmm. He's 1-6 in 9 starts with an ERA above 7. He's given up 54 hits in 35 and two-thirds innings. He's, you know, only got 23 strikeouts to 15 walks. So it hasn't been what you might expect out of the number 7 pick overall. When we saw him in spring training this year, he's just very raw. The stuff doesn't really jump out at you. He's just kind of a super, he's very athletic. He's a guy who was playing two ways for his high school team and was a first round talent in the outfield as well. Maybe not top 10 first round, but you know, definitely first round as an outfielder as well. And there were teams reportedly that liked him better as an outfielder. This year, it's been a little bit of a struggle. You know, you're someone who follows the box scores, it's been frustrating. He's had a couple of starts where he didn't make it out of the first inning. But at the same time, yeah. And that'll certainly blow up the ERA. When you give up 5 runs in 2/3 of an inning, you know, that's going to blow your ERA up until late in the season, frankly, based on that one start. But there have been glimpses. He does have, you know, one start where he threw 5 shutout innings against Lexington earlier this month. He's been a little better, but about maybe going deeper into games. He's pitched into the 6th his last 2 starts, even though the numbers aren't necessarily great. But for a guy like Ball, it's not about the numbers, and sometimes you have to look deeper into the box scores. You know, I remember when Henry Owens was in Greenville, the numbers didn't look great, but if you looked at the box score, he was just kind of prone to big innings. And it was the, if he can not give up the big inning, he'll be much better. And then next year, which was last year, he didn't give up the big inning, and lo and behold, he became, you know, the next big thing in the system. So, you know, with Ball, I don't think we've necessarily identified any one kind of bugaboo of his yet. You know, I think it's just getting his feet underneath him a little bit as a high school guy who was very raw when he was drafted. You know, he's the type of guy who, hey, you know what? There's a possibility that this means he stinks. I'm not going to say that you have to completely ignore the stats, right? He might just not be good. But at the same time, he might just be getting used to pitching in professional baseball. It wouldn't surprise me if he kind of, you know, maybe gets better a little bit month by month. And then, hey, maybe at the end of the year, he's not used to throwing that long of a season and he crashes and burns in August or something. I won't be concerned about him until, you know, if he's still not producing results mid to late next year.
Okay.
You have to give him some time. He'll definitely be in Greenville all of this season. It wouldn't surprise me if he repeats to start next season unless he's got, you know, some kind of electric spring training or adds, you know, some kind of great breaking pitch or something, or the command shows a market improvement. But,
right.
Yeah, it's been a rough go, to say the least, a little bit for Ball right now. He's not even in our top 10 on the website right now. In fact, we've got him at number 13, which I don't know if that's where I would personally have him necessarily, but it's defensible with who's above him. So, it's been a rough go of it, but, you know, we've still got his ceiling as a 7 in our 2-8 rating system. So the ceiling's still there, but, you know, the floor is still, you know, a 2, which would, you know, means, you know, washes out in the low minors. So we'll see where he winds up, where he goes, where he projects, but I'm not quite worried about him yet.
That is good to know. I mean, I saw the numbers and I went, oh God.
Yeah. It's nausea inducing. I'll give you that.
Yeah. After that, and we don't have to go through every pick or anything like that. There's a couple guys, who I guess are notable. One who we can dispense with rather quickly for now anyway is a guy I was pretty excited that they got is John Denny, the catcher out of high school. Although I don't know if he's going to catch at the pro level. You would probably
I think he'll catch. He was going to catch at least to start.
Okay. And he had what was it? Am I even supposed to talk about it? I don't even know. I think it was in the newspapers, right?
Yeah. Oh, it got reported. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it? A DWI? Is that what it was?
Yeah, he was I don't know if it was a DUI necessarily, but he basically got in trouble drinking underage, I think. And I think he might have just been stopped before operating the vehicle or something. I don't know why. Yeah.
I think I remember. I think he was driving on a suspended license and he got pulled over.
Yeah, oh, that's what it was. He was driving on a suspended license. And I think officer basically took it a little easy on him. And then, like, they caught him trying to drive again later in the night or something.
Yeah, later that day.
Someone drove him back to his truck or something. What we heard from Ben Charrington at the time was that they were going to set a program up for him and try and get him right before even thinking about baseball. What can I say at this point? I'll go ahead and say this. I don't think he's going to play this year.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to see him at all. Beyond that, who knows? And maybe we'll just leave it. We'll leave it with that. It's one of those, it could go any number of ways, so why bother projecting sort of off-field situations? So
sure. Okay.
We'll see.
On a more positive note, I think Teddy Stankiewicz, is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He is pitching and not repeatedly getting shelled. So the in that sense he's doing better than Denny and Ball. How is his first year in pro ball been?
Pretty good. I mean, the numbers don't jump off the page. 12 starts. 44 strikeouts and 18 walks in 63 innings. 5-4, 3.71 ERA. He's been good. He's very young for a junior college draftee. He was born in November of 93, so that makes him, 20 still in A-ball. I mean, to put it in some perspective, I think he's actually younger than Ty Buttrey, who you would be inclined to think is younger because Buttrey was a high school draftee, but Buttrey was born in March of 93. So for his age at the level he's at, he's been doing well. In fact, his last start on June the 11th, he went 7 innings of shutout ball, allowing just 2 hits and striking out 6. He was the league's player of the week, and I don't know if he was ours. I think Brian Johnson might have beat him out narrowly for our pitcher of the week. But anyway, yeah, he's been very good. He's been getting better. In the month of June, he's allowing only a .234 average against. He's another guy who's was a little raw when they drafted him and is working on some things. He hasn't gone less than 4 innings in a start yet. which is good for a younger guy in pro ball. Most of the time he's going at least five innings. He's gone six a number of times. Four times he's gone six innings and 12 starts, which you don't necessarily see in Greenville. So that means he's keeping his pitch counts low, which is good. And it's not jumping off the page. It's not a guy that's going to be, you know, top 100 or anything like that. But he's firmly in that sort of, lower tier of the top 20 in a good way. I would have a hard time leaving him outside of a top 20 in what's a very deep system right now. We've got him at number 20 on the site. I might personally have him a smidge higher, but he's been good so far.
Nice. Two other guys, and then I think I need to run. I don't know if you heard that.
Fair enough.
Two other guys that jump out. One is Nick Longy. Mm-hmm. And where's the other one? Joe Gunkel.
Yeah.
If you could touch on those guys real quick.
Sure. Well, let me hit Gunkel first, actually, because Gunkel was a guy who got drafted out of Westchester College last year, which is where the Red Sox scout Chris Calciano, the scout who signed him, also went to school, which was, I think, kind of the connection there. And he'd been kind of the big man at a Division II program where he, you know, went to the Division II World Series and, you know, put them on his back, I think 2 years in a row or something. Mm-hmm. He went to Lowell last year and they used him in relief and he was really good. I mean, 20 innings, 32 strikeouts, 3 walks, 8 hits, good. Just completely unhittable. So he went to Greenville this year and they started him in the bullpen and frankly, he just straight up forced them to put him into the rotation. He's been so good. He on the year in 17 appearances in 51 innings, he struck out 62 guys, walked 11, has allowed only 26 hits. And frankly, it wouldn't surprise me if they promoted him to Salem now. Greenville's at the All-Star break, which is why I say that. The All-Star break is when you tend to see a few guys get bumped up. But he's been outstanding. He could have been our pitcher of the month for May. His numbers were very good. He'll be a candidate for pitcher of the month for June. In June, in 18 innings, he's allowed 18 and a third, 9 hits, 4 walks, 18 strikeouts, 4 earned runs against. So his ERA is below 2 for the month in 3 starts. Not bad for a guy who had kind of gotten used to throwing true bullpen innings. It wasn't like he was a piggyback starter or anything. His first, handful of outings were 1 or 2 innings. And then they just stretched him out to put him into the rotation because he'd been so good. So I think they kind of made the decision. It's, you know, do you leave a guy in the bullpen and let him fly through the system and get to Boston at the end of next year? Or do you maybe try and see if there's a starter there?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the Justin Masterson situation where, you know, maybe his future is in the bullpen, but why not let it ride and see what happens? And maybe you get a starter out of it.
Sure.
Would you rather have a setup guy or a number 4 or 5 starter? I'd rather have the starter. So he's been very good. As for Longy, he is in Lowell. He went the full extended spring training, and in Lowell, he's mostly been playing outfield, I believe. I haven't looked the past couple of days, but, only a 5-game sample right now, not necessarily looking at what he's done tonight, but actually let's look at what he's done. He's not playing tonight. So never mind. But yeah, he's been pretty good hitting 350, which is, 7 for 20. So
right.
Whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
With 3 doubles and a triple so far, we knew he was a guy that was going to be able to get bat to ball. The interesting thing for me is they've actually even given him some time in right field, which, I remember seeing him last year in the Gulf Coast League. He's not fast or anything. He, in fact, if I'm remembering correctly, he was something of a base clogger. But that said, I remember seeing him play left field off of the game I happened to catch in the GCL was at JetBlue Park on the Major League field. And he played the monster in left quite nicely. In fact, I was kind of startled by how well he played it. So maybe, I don't know, it's not that he's a right fielder down the road, but they're just kind of exposing him to maybe some different positions to get the optimal lineup on the field for the spinners, but that they're confident putting him in right without being a complete train wreck is good. He's a guy that, again, he'll hit, especially in maybe the lower levels for a high school draftee, with a 1995 birth date, which just makes me sad. From a human standpoint, not a baseball watcher standpoint. he's doing good so far. We'll see what a full Lowell season does for him. And then next year he'll get full season ball with Greenville. But, you know, a lot to like there, I think. And he's a guy who I bet could be pushing top the top 20 by the end of the season if he hits the way he can in Lowell.
Nice. Nice. That's
yeah.
That's exciting. So we'll see how I guess how the beginning of that draft ends up. But it at least sounds like there's some guys who are worthwhile towards the end.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I mean, last year, the thing to remember is, yeah, they drafted seventh overall, but their next pick wasn't until number 45, which, you know, for reference this year, the Sox had picks 26 and 33 for their first two picks, you know, which were both ahead of 45. And the draft last year was just really, really weak. It was not regarded as a very good draft at all. Mm-hmm. And there's some guys that, you know, you might have been high on that haven't really done much. And there's some guys that, you know, have kind of surprised a little bit. But, you know, again, it's a thing where you got to wait a couple of years down the road and kind of see where things wind up. Honestly, you know, maybe they'll find a couple guys. You know, Carlos Asuaje has had a great start to the year in Greenville, as has Jansen Witt. You know, but separating the, you know, Mike Joneses and Jared Stanleys from the legit prospects, it takes a couple of years. So we'll see where things are maybe a year from now. And if those guys are still hitting, maybe they found a few sleepers.
Nice. Well, I hate to wrap this up because honestly, I feel like we could talk for three more hours, but that would probably destroy a lot of social lives.
Yeah.
So let's not do that. But Chris, I hope we can have you on again in the near future to talk about the system. And I can't believe I'm having you on and not talking about Sean Coyle. And I'm gonna be upset.
I almost brought him up when we were talking about Pennsylvania high schoolers. But
yeah, there you go. Right.
Yeah. Hey, you know. And there's also this guy who's in Pawtucket playing a little bit of center field. You may have heard a thing or two about Betts is his name.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't even talk about him. I'm gonna
yeah. Which this part by the way, one more name thing if I can just mention it. The Red Sox drafted another Betts this year, named Jordan Betts, who was a third baseman at Duke, who's in Lowell right now and is not related, that I understand, and that's just gonna make things so much more unnecessarily difficult, and I kind of hate them for it. But
well, maybe he'll be really bad and be out of the system soon.
I mean, I'm not going to say I hope that, because I hope he has a long and fruitful career, but it might make things a little more convenient. I don't know. Jordan, if Jordan's parents are listening, I'm sure he's a swell child.
We're just joking around. No yes. offense intended. Well,
if there is offense intended, it's because he went to Duke. So
there you go. Yeah. Yeah. you didn't go to Duke, did you, Brendan?
Are you kidding?
I just, before I was about to say mean things about Duke, I wanted to be sure.
Oh no.
Okay. I was just being sure. All right. Well, I do need to run. So, follow Chris Hatfield on Twitter at SP Chris Hatfield. I never say this, but I should. Chris, you do a great job of telling people that on the podcast. You can follow Brendan at Unexpected Base, and he is a good Red Sox follow, absolutely. Better than me, actually. I just tweet a bunch of crap. But if you wanted to follow my crap, you could at MattyMatty2000 on the Twitter machine. And if anyone wants to go to iTunes and give us some stars and some nice words, boy, would we appreciate that. So in any case, we will be back next week or sometime in the near future, as we do. This has been the 105th Over the Monster podcast. So thanks for listening.